Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new news edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone is having a wonderful start to the week so far. Some things that I want to talk about on the podcast today. I'm going to be doing my review on the brand new Rebel Moon film, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. And I'm also going to be getting into a bunch of trending trailers going on around the world of Hollywood from the last couple of days, including some big ones that came out today. And to kick it all off, I'm of course going to be talking about the biggest one to kind of start off the week, and that of course is talking about the new trailer for the brand new MCU film Deadpool and Wolverine. It's directed by Sean Levy and it stars an awesome cast that includes of course the Merc with a Mouth himself and Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman, Emma Corrin, Monica Bracken, Rob Delaney, Karen Sonne, and Matthew McFadden from Succession fame, of course, playing Tom Wamsgams from that show. They are all in this film, and of course, this one has the highly anticipated kind of debut duo of both Deadpool and Wolverine, as it says in the title of this film. And I'm somebody who's very excited for this movie. It's one of my most anticipated films of the year for sure. It's one of my most anticipated for the summer movie season. I'm really, really excited about this film before this trailer even came out. And I really did enjoy the first trailer that came out during the Super Bowl. I thought it did a really good job of, even though it hid some stuff about Logan and Wolverine and what his impact is going to be, even though they tease it at the very end, it was very much more Deadpool-centric and involved the kind of the Time Variance Authority that we've seen in the TV show from the MCU and Loki and how they get kind of mixed in together. And I think this show, or rather, excuse me, movie, is going to kind of weave all that stuff in together and deal with the multiversal aspect of the MCU and other universes, such as the Fox universes that we've seen from the X-Men franchise before it was, of course, bought by Disney in 2019, 2018, or even I think actually 2017 is when it was officially bought by Disney overall. But it's been a hot minute since we've really had any traction from Fox Marvel characters being bought into the MCU, and this is the very first time that it's happening. And so with this trailer, I think it was more about going into the story, but also getting to see that duo together. And I think the great thing that this trailer highlighted wasn't just actually featuring and seeing Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, but highlighting the duo and the chemistry that Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds clearly have with one another. And I thought this trailer did a fantastic job of highlighting every single one of those aspects. I think, with the chemistry between these two characters really is magic. It's gold. And I think you've seen that off screen before, of course, with Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman, and they've had this kind of banter back and forth over the years. And so seeing that actually being played on the screen was really exciting to see. And I think one of the key things for Wolverine in this film is we all know Hugh Jackman is a great dramatic actor. And I think the weight and the gravitas that he's given to Wolverine throughout his stretch run as the character, from the original X-Men films to Logan and X-Men Days of Futures Past, he's given it a sense of emotional heft and weight that makes those films kind of not grounded per se, but have a lot more of a dramatic purpose than maybe other actors might have brought to the role. And I think it's why it is so hard to see someone else take on this role other than Hugh Jackman, because of just every single way that he's able to bring the action, the grit, the anger, the humor, the tragedy of this character. Jackman's just been able to embody that. So I think the challenge for him in this film is keeping on with what he's done in that with the dramatic chops. And I think you very much see that there is a kind of serious underlining tone, at least with the way that this trailer is kind of cut. But also, of course, you get that comedy with Deadpool that is very much, again, like I said, the back and forth between the two of them. And I think the Deadpool aspect is going to bring out more of the comedy-centric part of the Logan character that we've maybe seen here and there, but I think we're going to get more of that in this movie. And of course, he's going full hard R in this film, and the entire movie itself, just from this trailer, seems to really be going in the direction of an R rating. And I think that's been one of the big questions surrounding this movie, is what is the R-rated going to be, especially because this is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which very much has a kind of PG-13, four-quadrant family event film that a lot of these movies have taken, but also the fact that it's under the Disney umbrella, and Disney is very much family-oriented. They don't really kind of go crazy R under its, unless it's under the umbrella of what they have now with 20th Century Studios, and sometimes Searchlight Films will do that, and some other 20th Century films, but really the Disney Studios film machine does not usually go hard R. Even in their shows that they have now on Disney Plus, they don't go in the direction that HBO does or Apple TV or Amazon. They have the kind of parameters that don't really allow for that restriction to get to that level. But it seems like Deadpool and Wolverine is really going to push that. And that was kind of a big question going into this film. And I think this trailer definitely answered a lot of questions with the swearing, very much the violence, and just the crazy antics that are going to be going on in this film. I thought the cocaine line between Blind Al and with Wade and what Wade was doing, I thought they were, that was a kind of fun banter line with the whole cocaine, and Kevin Feige won't allow us to say that line, and I know that was something that played at CinemaCon, but to see it actually play out in the trailer was really, really cool, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see just how balls to the walls they really are allowed to go in this film. And I think just from the trailer, you're able to see that. And then to go back to Hugh Jackman real quick, I think the costume design for Wolverine looks awesome. I think that was a big question of would they actually go more in the traditional style of what the animated X film costume was, or even the comic book more accurate look of what Wolverine has than what they've done with this character in live action in the films over the years. And it looks awesome between the actual suit and then, of course, having the sleeveless look, which is more comic accurate. And again, you just see how jacked Hugh Jackman actually is. And even though he's this age, and one of the big things that when he retired from the role was that just having that workout regimen over and over and over again, it takes a toll on the body. And even though he probably never wanted to do that again, to come back and do it for this role, he commits, and you see that in his build, and he just looks incredible and just absolutely fit. Going to some of the other aspects of the trailer that I really liked, I think Emma Curran's villain looks really, really good, although I don't know who it is in the comic books. I am excited for the actress. I'm a huge fan of them, and I think that Emma Curran is going to be a very, very interesting villain. And I know sometimes Marvel villains aren't always the best, and sometimes they can be really good, like a Killmonger or a Thanos, and sometimes they can be really, really bad, and they're kind of more the weaker links of some of these MCU films. So I'm hoping that Emma Curran's villain actually is more of a standout villain in this one than in past MCU movies. Also, something else that kind of, I think, picked up with a lot of other people that watch a trailer, and I was certainly one of those, was that when you're kind of in these like void-like settings where it seems like Wolverine and Deadpool are kind of fighting on this like barren wasteland, some of the things, like you had somebody riding on like this big stage, and he had, I think it was these cars that were act as kind of like carriage horses in a way. It definitely had like a Mad Max vibe to it, and it looks really, really cool, like kind of wasteland dystopia futuristic setting that they're going to be in at some points in the film. That looks really awesome. I think the action fight sequences look really cool. Just the little bits that we got between Deadpool and Wolverine going at it, between his metallic hands, of course, with the claws, and Deadpool's actual swords, and the back and forth, that seems to be kind of really good fluid action. And Sean Levy is somebody who I was actually really excited to hear that he got this gig, and I know he has a really good relationship with Ryan Reynolds over the years in films that he's done, like Free Guy, and he also did The Adam Project a couple years ago for Netflix with him. And so they kind of have a good established rapport, but he's also done some really good stuff with Stranger Things over the years. And so he just has a really good sense and an eye for making feature blockbuster filmmaking, and I think this was the right move for him to do, and I'm excited to see what else he's going to hone in on with this film, because I think this fits in right with his wheelhouse for what he's done in previous directorial efforts from him. So it looks really, really good on a directorial level, and the sequences look really good. Some of the MCU highlights that really looked interesting to me when it came to some of the things in the trailer. It seems like there's going to be at least some kind of sorcerer portal, kind of like in the sense of Doctor Strange a little bit, that maybe might be jumping from universes to universes. And that's been one of the big things for this film, of how many cameos are we going to get, kind of like Spider-Man No Way Home. Although I will say, even though there's been a lot of rumors and kind of reports going around that might be true, might be false, of some of the cameos that might be appearing in this film, it doesn't seem like it's kind of running rampant like it did with Spider-Man No Way Home. It seemed like with that Spider-Man movie, every other day there was kind of a leak of what was going on, so it lost a little bit of that appeal. I think with Deadpool and Wolverine, if there's going to be a lot of cameos, since it is going to be probably jumping through multiple universes, that we might have an idea of who's going to be in it, but it's still kind of up in the air, and I think there's going to be a lot of surprises for what's to come. So I think that scene indicated of where we're going to go in all these universes and who Deadpool and Wolverine could meet, whether it's other variants of themselves or different versions of different characters within maybe the Fox universe, as this seems to be a potential indication of a love letter to these characters that Feige has worked with before he did Marvel Studios. Because before Kevin Feige ran what is known as probably the biggest franchise in the world right now and in the history of movies, he was on some of those previous iterations of these Marvel characters, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films and of course those early X-Men movies. He has an affinity for these characters and those versions of them. So I think you're going to see a lot of those potential cameos as well. Again, not saying that it's confirmed or anything like that, but I do think we'll probably see some of those things as well. Another big highlight was that it seemed like Emma Curran's villain and her kind of side villains in this gang that they're in seems like they're living in, I guess, is a variant of Ant-Man. It looks like it's not just his helmet, but it looks like the skull, whoever was wearing that Ant-Man helmet, is like the living headquarters for this villain. So that to me was very, very interesting as well. So and a lot of those were kind of the key highlights that really stuck out to me when I was looking in this trailer. Obviously, you see the 20th Century Studios logo that's kind of in that wasteland. That was in a lot of set photos that came out in the last year or so when they were filming. So all of this is really, really interesting to me. I'm excited about this film. And I think the big question going into Deadpool and Wolverine is, I think the biggest question on a lot of people's heads is, how is this film going to do for the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Because right now, the MCU is on a little bit of life support. Not saying that it's dead or anything like that, or it's on the verge of just collapsing, but the MCU has gone through some bumps and bruises throughout the last couple of years, and some of it might be due to the pandemic and kind of the jumbling that a lot of studios, including Disney and Marvel Studios, had to do with the MCU and production and post-production and releasing some of these things. But I think right now it also has to do with production of quality, and it's not just the movies, it's the TV shows, and I think all these different characters that a lot of audiences are trying to keep up with. And I think with something like the Infinity Saga, even though you had multiple characters coming into it, as audience members, they were able to kind of condense that and relate to a lot of these characters and identify a lot of the individual characters. With the post-Infinity Saga movies and TV shows and the plan that Marvel has, it's just been so many different characters, and I think it's more new characters than old characters that people can relate to and know and enjoy. And I think for Deadpool and Wolverine, the big thing is going to be being able to bring not just the MCU fans back, but also bring back the critics. I think make a positive, enjoyable MCU film that everyone can enjoy, get some positive buzz going about the film, and also I think get the general audience back into it, because they know these characters, they know Deadpool, they know Wolverine, especially Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, and seeing that duo team up in for the first time in this movie, I think is going to be very, very interesting. And very much the hype of this film feels like the hype of Spider-Man No Way Home, where we're going to get all these potential cameos and legacy characters from previous installments that maybe older audience members remember from their childhood that they're excited to see in this one, along with getting people that are in that phase that are just enjoying the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think this one needs to be a big hit, both critically with the audiences, and that'll translate to bigger dollars that the MCU is accustomed to seeing. I'm hoping that this one can maybe hit $1 billion. I never thought that it would be tough for an MCU film to hit $1 billion again, or it would just be great if it's able to maybe hit that, because the MCU over the years during the Infinity Saga, during the final couple of years between really 2018 and 2019. It was just really $1 billion hit after another, whether it was between one or two bill at most. And I think for right now, it would just be great if this film would be able to hit $800, $900 million for Marvel and for Kevin Feige. But this one definitely has the potential to hit a billion, given the hype and who's in it, who's behind it, what could happen, and the potentiality of this movie. It's very much there for $1 billion to be in play and give the MCU some stability moving forward, because I think for this year it was smart for Marvel and Disney to just have one feature film come out at while they prioritize other things that are coming in the next couple of years and get their slate and their ducks in a row for the next couple of years when they put out two or three films on their slate like they were accustomed to doing pre-pandemic or even really post-pandemic as well. So I think this is a year of rehabilitation behind the scenes, and I think that they have the heavy hitter that can kind of rejigger everything and get back into the good graces of some audience members with this movie. So there's a lot riding on it. I do like the release date for this film. It's coming out July 28th, which is towards the end of July, but it's right at that time period where people are going to be out of school. They're going to be enjoying the summer season overall, whether it's going to beaches or hanging out with friends and family. But it's also, of course, the summer movie season, and that is really kind of the height of the season when we get into the July corridor. And I think it's going to have a really good run going towards the end of that month into the month of August, where there are some potentially competitive films that might be able to oust it from the number one spot after its initial release. There's Borderlands, which of course is with Cate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, Jamie Lee Curtis as well, and it has some kind of IP behind it, some name brand, but I don't think it's going to be enough to take down Deadpool and Wolverine. You have the new Alien film, Alien Romulus, coming out. You have the second chapter of Kevin Costner's Horizon saga that's coming out. And you have the new M. Night film as well coming out earlier in the month with Borderlands and Trap. So I don't know if those films are going to be able to take down Deadpool and Wolverine, but right now, for Deadpool and Wolverine, the month of August is pretty much clear for it to have pretty much little competition potentially that it will have in terms of eyeballs and people wanting to go see it. And if it is successful and people do like it, the one great thing about a Marvel film that is the reason, pretty much one of the big reasons for why it reaps so much of the money that it does and has over $1 billion for multiple films, is the rewatchability factor. And if there's really no competition, if the film is as good as it's being advertised to be right now in the marketing campaign, then I think multiple people will go to the theaters over and over and over again for those initial couple weeks to watch this film, which is why coming out towards the end of July, don't have a lot of competition. It could go roll right through August leading up to the end of the summer movie season into the fall movie season with films like Beetlejuice, which will give it some competition. But at that point, Deadpool and Wolverine will probably be at the tail end of its box office run at that point. So I think this is something to be really successful. It has all the ingredients there. The trailer really, really kind of gave it everything that I think audiences wanted to have. And I think the marketing campaign is doing a really smart job in what they're giving to people right now with this film overall. So I really enjoyed the film, or rather the trailer for this one. What did you guys think about the trailer, the new trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine? Let me know down below in the comment section and leave your thoughts. And now to go on to some of the other trending trailers that happened, not just today, but over the last couple of days from the weekend and so forth. The other one that I want to get into that came out along with Deadpool and Wolverine is the brand new trailer for The Watchers, which is going to be the feature directorial debut for M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, Aishna Night Shyamalan, who is going to be somebody who has worked with M. Night, of course, over the last couple of his last couple of movies. And this one is going to be one that is written by her as well, and it's going to be, again, her debut as a feature film director going solo in this one. And it stars a really good cast that includes Dakota Fanning and Georgina Campbell, who was the lead in one of the more kind of surprise hits in horror over the last couple of years in Barbarian. This is based off of a novel of somebody of the name of A.M. Shine, and the synopsis for The Watchers reads, as 28-year-old artist Mina gets stranded in an expensive untouched forest in Western Ireland, upon finding shelter, she unknowingly becomes trapped alongside three strangers who are watched and stalked by mysterious creatures each night. And if you've listened to this podcast before, I'm somebody who, again, is not the biggest horror fan in the world. I'm the biggest horror watcher in the world. I'm not somebody who always goes out to watch horror films, but if a horror film does pique my interest, like Abigail did this past weekend, which I really enjoyed, and I'll have a review for that one out in the next couple of days, then I will go see those films in theaters. And for me, The Watchers is one that might pique my interest a little bit. It's definitely got the intensity, the scary factor to it. And I think what is really effective for this one is that, like it says in the advertisement, you don't know who these beings are. You don't know who the Watchers are. And it definitely kind of plays into more of the suspenseful, build up the tension, scariness, the psychological thriller horror aspect of a horror movie. And I think those are some of the better horror films to come out over the last couple of years. And for Aishana, this is going to be, I think, a big test for her because she's worked as a second unit director on the last two M. Night films with Old and Knock in the Cabin, and she was a director for some of his of M. Night's TV show in Servant that came out over the last couple of years. She directed, I believe, 6 episodes of that show. So she definitely has the chops to take on this next leap. She has the experience to do it. And so I think she's definitely following in her father's footsteps, but also she's looking to make her own name. And I think this is one that definitely will do very well, potentially. I think the M. Shyamalan name is going to be very, very key for this one, because even though it's not M. Night, it's still his daughter. And I think that this is going to be a very interesting film to kick off her career with. And for me, I'm not going to be going in with the notion of, even if it's a Shyamalan film, that it's going to have some kind of big twist or whatnot. That's what M. Night does. I'm not looking for his daughter to replicate that same thing. I'm just hoping that she's able to deliver a really good experience during the summer movie season when this one kicks off on June 14th. And I think that this one could have the potential to be a successful horror film in the summer movie season. I think one of the great things when you preview each summer season is looking to see what potential horror films could really kind of knock it out of the park and do really, really well. Last year, it was the A24 film Talk to Me, which I think did really, really well. The year before that, it was the film The Black Phone with Scott Derrickson, and he also had Ethan Hawke in that film as well. And that was one that surprised a lot of people in the summer movie season that people really gravitated towards. So horror is definitely a genre that gets people out during the summer season. And looking at Dakota Fanning in this one, even though she's not the biggest name, I think it's still a draw that will entice people. But I just think people are going to be looking for horror, and I think this one is definitely going to be on the list of horror films to check out. And then speaking of Shyamalan films to check out, as this summer is being dubbed by the Shyamalans and some others as well, the Summer of Shyamalan. Next year, it's going to be the Summer of Superman, as James Gunn has coined it at CinemaCon. This year, it seems like it is going to be the Summer of Shyamalans, as Aishana has her film coming out. We also have another M. Night film actually coming out this year on August 9th, and it is going to be his new film, Trap. And the first trailer for that film debuted on Friday afternoon this past week. And this is a film that is written, directed by M. Night, and it stars a cast that includes Josh Hartnett, who's kind of having this kind of resurgent career, this kind of heart renaissance, I guess we can start calling it, once this film comes out and it gains traction, because he was really, really good in Oppenheimer. He had a supporting role in that film, but even though I think we give accolades to, of course, Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, who are all great in that film, somebody who really shined and I think surprised a lot of people, including myself, was Josh Hartnett. And it's great to see him get a leading role in this one, and I think it's a really, really good one. As the synopsis for Trap reads, as a serial killer dubbed The Butcher joins his daughter at a concert for pop star Lady Raven, The Butcher realizes the concert is actually a trap set by the police to catch him. And I think the great thing about this trailer, and I remember hearing about it when it debuted the past week in CinemaCon for the Warner Brothers panel, was this kind of twist within the twist. And of course, like I was saying during the Watchers breakdown of the trailer, was that I'm not expecting anything from his daughter when it comes to the twist, but for M. Night, it's the expectation of a twist. And what intrigues me is that we get the twist off right off the bat, and it's a twist within a twist. It's the fact that this guy and his daughter go to a concert. The concert is actually a ruse and a trap set to capture a serial killer. That's twist number one. Twist number two is the fact that not only is Josh Hartnett in this situation, he is the reason this situation is happening, as he is the serial killer that the police and federal law enforcement are looking for. And then it kind of rewires your brain to figure out, well, now it's about seeing what this guy is able to do to get out of the situation that is clearly about him, and how he keeps it from his daughter and involves in daughter. How is he going to get out of it with her, keep his identity intact, all this kind of stuff. And you start to think to yourself, am I actually going to be rooting for this serial killer? And I just think the trailer does a great job of kind of playing up those twists, and then being one thing at the beginning of the trailer, and then doing a 180 and becoming something else completely different. And I love that it seems to be more of this kind of psychological horror thriller. Again, kind of talking about these new horror films that are coming out. It's not just about the blood and gore and guts and violence. It's about more of the what is going to be going on, the tension that's building between him and law enforcement, and the kind of back and forth cat and mouse game that's going to be going on for this one. And this is really the first M. Night film that I am actually excited about in a long, long time. Probably since 2019, when Glass came out. That was, of course, the trilogy capper of his Unbreakable trilogy. And I was excited. I was interested in Old and Knock at the Cabin because it's M. Night, and I'm a big M. Night supporter. I've liked his films over recently, and this kind of new age of M. Night that we've gotten ever since his kind of flubs in the middle of his career, like the Happening and The Last Airbender. But he's gotten it back together over these last couple of years, and so I'm excited for his stuff. But I'm really, really excited about this one. I think when we talk about the summer movie season, it's one that I definitely have my eyes set on when it comes to the month of August and throughout the entirety of the summer movie season. So I'm really excited for this one. I think for Josh Hartnett, again, like I said at the top of talking about this trailer, I think this could be a really, really good role for him, because the way that he's able to be charming and effective, but also you just see that there's something more sinister behind him when that reveal happens, that he is the actual killer, and you see a lot of close-up on his eyes, the way that they kind of twitch, and what he's trying to think in his head as he's trying to compute everything and digest it all, and how he's planning all these different escapes, potentially trying to get out of here. I think he's able to embody all that, and I'm really excited to see what this film does for him now that he's in a leading role like this, because again, he's a very good actor, and I think a film like Black Hawk Down, even though that was earlier in his career, really resembled that this guy can act, and he's not just a pretty looking face. He can legitimately act and perform, and I think this film is going to be another one to showcase that even at his age now, he's a little bit older, but he can act and he can do some stuff, and I'm excited to see what he's able to do with this one. Again, it does come out on August 9th, so I think this one could be kind of a little bit of a sleeper surprise in the month of August as we look for films to kind of maintain the last couple of weeks of the summer movie season, even though Deadpool and Wolverine will probably do very, very well and keep it afloat. What else can kind of be kind of counter-programming for that month? And I'm hoping, and I think this film is going to be one of those, especially if it gets very good reviews and it lives up to some of the other M. Night films we've had over the last couple of years. And then the final trailer that I want to talk about in the trending trailers segment of the podcast is another one that came out on Friday, and that is, or excuse me, actually not Friday, it was actually Thursday this one came out, and that is the trailer for Hitman, which is written and directed by Richard Linklater, and was also co-written by its main leading man of this film in Mr. Glenn Powell. It also stars Adria Arjona, who of course has been in projects such as Andor, and I'm very excited to see her in this film. And the basic synopsis for Hitman is that it is about an undercover Houston police officer who poses as a reliable hitman to arrest those trying to hire him until he tries to save a woman in need. Now, this film actually originally came out in 2023 when it premiered both at the Venice and Toronto International Film Festival last year. And this is a project that I heard a lot of really good things about last year after it premiered. It was one that I heard could be maybe a surprise sleeper award season contender because it came out in the fall festival circuit, but it's not coming out officially until this year when it premieres on Netflix. But I heard really good things about it. I heard great things about Glenn Powell, about Adria. I heard great things about what Linklater does with the script along with Powell and what he does as a director. It's a comedy mixed in and imbued with some drama in there as well, which is always a custom with Richard Linklater films. And so for me, I was really intrigued by this film. And then watching the trailer, I was all in for it. I am very, very, very excited for this movie. I'm a big fan of Glenn Powell ever since I saw him in Top Gun Maverick. I thought he was really good in Anyone But You. I'm excited to see what he's able to do as a leading man once again in Twisters, which I think could really solidify him as an A-lister. And if this film does really well as well this summer, we could be talking about the summer of the Shyamalans, but we could also be talking about the summer of Mr. Glenn Powell. And I'm really excited to see what he's able to do in this movie. The way that he's able to play up all these different identities, but also be charismatic and sly and sexy, but also weird and awkward at the same time. And it seems like him and Adria have really good chemistry together. It just looks like a lot of fun and the kind of summer film that I would love to see in theaters. And maybe I might try to go see this one in select theaters when it comes out on May 24th before hitting Netflix on June 7th, because I definitely want to see this on the big screen. It gives me definite big screen vibes. And Linklater is somebody who he's done some streaming projects as well, but he is somebody who I would love to see his stuff always on the big screen. But I think this one could be kind of like how we were talking about with Trap and The Watchers as potential sleeper films during the summer season. I think this could be another one that surprises a lot of people, hopefully, if it has the positive buzz that you need for a film like this. But I'm all in for this one. It looks like a ton of just awesome fun, and I am so for it. I think it's got some really good co-stars in this one that you can lean on and market with and get people to watch it just because of the actors that are in it. But I think this one is going to do really, really well, especially given the good buzz that came out of the festival circuit last year. Again, it comes out in select theaters on May 24th, and it's coming out on Netflix a week later on June 7th, or rather 2 weeks later on June 7th. So what do you guys think about all these trailers that came out, including Deadpool and Wolverine, The Watchers, Trap, and Hitman? Which one were your favorite trailers that came out over the last couple of days? What do you think about the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer? Did it live up to your expectations? What about Trap and Hitman? Are you excited about those films as well? Let me know down below and leave your thoughts. And the final thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is to do a little review of a film I saw over the weekend, and that is Rebel Moon Part 2, the Scargiver, excuse me. And this is a film that I was going to do an initial just full review on and place it on the podcast as its own separate episode, but I just felt like I could run it through on one of my main shown podcast episodes and not give it its full kind of podcast episode, because there's not really a whole lot that I have to say about it. I think it's a good way to kind of close out the show. So this one is once again directed by Zack Snyder, has an awesome cast that includes Sophia Patella, Jaimin Hansu, Ed Skern, Michael Huseman, Ray Fisher, Froffy, and the voice of Sir Anthony Hopkins. The film takes place on the moon of Veldet, where Korra and the crew of warriors ventures to help the farmers to defend and fight for their home against the Mother World. Now, Part 1, A Child of Fire for Rebel Moon came out last year in December of 2023, before we rang in the new year that is now 2024. And Part 1 for me, if you want to check out my full review, it is on the podcast right now. You can scroll down. I did a review for it in December of last year when I first saw it. And that film, I thought it was good. I thought it was okay. It could have been a lot better than I was anticipating it to be. I liked the characters. Some of the action was really good, but there was nothing really there with the story. And I think that to me is the problem with this one as well, because it really does feel like a part two. It picks up right where the last film leads off, and you're just kind of off to the races. And I think for me, the issue is really just with the whole thing in general, is that the story isn't all that there. The dialogue isn't really the best. I think the action in this part is very, very good. I think the last hour of this film is enough for people to actually enjoy it, because I do think the action is very, very good and the stakes are there in this one. But I just think overall, this film could have been a tightly compacted 2.5-3 hour Netflix film that could have just been titled Rebel Moon. And I think it would have been enough for it, that there would have been enough weight there without even the director's cuts to give you a little bit more of what's going on. Because it didn't feel like this was a whole movie, nor did part one. And again, it's part one and part two. But I think there was enough there just to make it one whole movie in and of itself. And I felt like with these characters, I didn't feel like the dialogue was all there, nor was the character development really there. But I do have to give it up to the cast, though, because the cast makes you care for these characters. The way that they're able to work with what they have and do their job makes you feel for these characters when their lives are on the line. And I think that is a credit to people like Sophia Patella, who I think really makes you care for Cora. Same thing with Jaimin Hans, whose character, and all these different people. That Ed Skern played a great villain. He played an a-hole villain, and I think he did a really good job of doing that. And I just felt like there were certain things missing within the character developments that could have been a lot better overall. But the cast did what they needed to do, and they made you connect with their characters based on what they did with the script that was given. I don't give the script credit because I think there could have been more development with the characters from the page to the screen. But what they were given, you got to commend the actors for putting more on the performance and getting the most out of what's there. Even if it's thinly written, you give it to them for what they're able to do. I thought the editing was actually a bit choppy. I felt like it was kind of like part one, where you're just kind of going through the motions of recruiting everyone. I felt like they were going through the motions of giving people backstories overall. It was like, okay, now we're going to go to this person's backstory and this person's backstory. And it just didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel like we should be learning more about this person. It felt like we need to put this in here. We're going to put it in here. And I thought to myself also, and even though I'm a Zack Snyder fan and I like his films and I don't mind his slow motion all the time, the slow motion to me in this one was a little bit too much for me in this one. I thought also, kind of going back to the editing and kind of putting the two together, some of the slow motion, all of a sudden you're in this big moment and it's a dramatic moment, and then you're cut to somebody else doing something in a battle sequence on a ship or on another part of the playing field, and you just feel like you're missing a moment, and then they'll cut to that moment 5 minutes later where you just felt like, I could have just seen this moment happen, and then you go to the next moment. And so it just felt like it was a little all over the place. Even though the battle sequences were awesome, the editing was a little bit messy when it came to that kind of moment. And again, the slow motion didn't need to be there all that much. I felt like they were overdoing it a little bit in that regard. To me, I wouldn't want to see more of these movies, honestly, but I do think that part two does enough in that last hour to make it entertaining, although I wouldn't really recommend anyone check out these films. And to me, I have to see what these director's cuts are about, because the also thing to me that really kind of made my enthusiasm shrink for these movies is the fact that I'm seeing what these preliminary kind of skeleton theatrical or kind of more loose, like very theatrical cut films are. It's kind of the bare bones of what these director cuts are going to be, which seems to be more potential meat on the bones. If you know Zack Snyder filmography, you know usually the director's cuts are the better versions of the films, which always bugs me, because then let those be the cuts of the films, if that's the case. And I think that's always the thing with Zack Snyder is it's either the guy is not allowed to share his vision, or he just goes completely to the extreme that it's too much for his studio, that they can't market the initial releases of these films on that, and then they let him to be as creatively free as he wants to be in these director's cuts. So for me, it's okay, I'm watching these installments, and even though it's not giving me anything, I'm still going to wait for the director's cuts, but these theatrical cuts should still be good enough that I'm enjoying these, and then it will get me excited to see these director's cuts. And I think audience members who might have been on the Rebel Moon boat a little bit are not going to be there when these director's cuts eventually come out, because it's like, if it's going to be more of the same, then why am I going to watch these? But I'm going to be tuning into them to see what they're about. I'll probably do reviews on them when they come out later in the year, just to see if there's truly a difference in the quality of the films overall. But I just think there was a lot here that just could have been done so much better. There was a lot of character development that was rushed, and some of it wasn't even there. And again, to me, that's the fact that, well, if I'm not getting it here, then I might get it in the director's cut, But if that's the case, then give me the director's cut first. So for me, it was very frustrating watching these films. I did have a little bit of a good time with, again, the final hour of part two, but it was still frustrating me to watch it. I'd still give it a 5.2 out of 10 stars because, again, I think the acting was really well done. And in that regard, it makes you connect with the characters. And then I do think that it is, the action was really, really well done in the final hour of the film. So I was entertained, although I wasn't ecstatic about where things are left off and where things could continue. I'm hoping maybe these director's cuts are able to do that with this film, these films, moving forward in the next couple of months. So I wouldn't highly recommend Rebel Moon Part 2 if you haven't checked out Rebel Moon Part 1. If you have and you want to finish at least this part of the story, then I would check out just kind of finishing off where these characters are by the end of the film. So if you have seen Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, what did you think about it? Let me know down below and leave your thoughts. But with that down and out of the way, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bassell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in onto the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro?, the number one source of what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Attic Radio, Fretzelmania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and Twitter at RealAmbiguous. And if you want to check out Canopy Treehouse, use the coupon code AMBIGUOUS. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter and X at Bassell Samuel. That's BUSSELLSAMUEL. And also on Facebook at Sam Bassell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, keep on screening.